Blog Talk Radio.
When I was a little girl, I had a razor, only doll I've ever owned. Well, I love you just the way I love that rag doll. Only now my love has grown, and it gets stronger in every way, and it gets deeper each day, and it gets harder day by day. Oh,
I love you, my oh my.
That was two titans of the R&B sounds in Motown from the 60s. Diana Ross, and of course, my favorite male singer I can pick out anytime. That's Levi Stubbs for the lead singer for the Four Tops. The Supremes and the Four Tops covered the song, what we just heard, River Deep, Mountain High, a song by Ike and Tina Turner, released as the title to the track of 1966 studio album and on Philly's Records. Phil Spector had seen the Ike and Tina Turner Review perform at a club on the Sunset Strip, invited them to appear on the big TNT show. Spector was impressed by Tina Turner and wanted to use her voice with the Wrecking Crew, which we all know about, and his Wall of Sound productions technique. He went to the Turner's house and struck a deal with Ike Turner to produce Tina. Ike agreed but wanted the recordings to be credited to Ike and Tina Turner. Same on him. So again, the Wrecking Crew comes up. Now, the Wall of Sound was one of three studios that were working back then. We know about the Wrecking Crew, the group of excellent studio artists, put out 85% of music during about four or five year period, the end of the 60s, early 70s. If you don't know about Wrecking Crew, look them up. Well, tonight, first, I'm Jay Hatter, your host. I'm here with Deborah Lee.
Hey, Hatter. Pretty cool,
you know,
how the Wrecking Crew keeps popping up, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and when you recognize what it means, it didn't mean anything until you do have a little history on them.
Saw the name somewhere, but until you dug into it and shared all that stuff with us, I had no clue how, one, busy they were, and two, influential they were in one of the greatest musical times ever.
Yeah, that's what blew me away. And like, there was a lot of musicians that came later. There was a drummer, I can't remember his name, but a prominent drummer. He had three idols that he looked up for inspiration, and find out that the hit record, the actual recording, was done by one guy. So it sort of blew him away, because they did the music for the hit for the groups, and there was a reason for that. But tonight, we're going to do a Motown. Anytime I do a Motown show, I feel incomplete, because there's so much there, so many individuals, Berry Gordy, the mastermind behind it. So I narrowed it down to, let's be just into the female groups, Martha and the Vandellas, the Supremes, Gladys Knight, Dionne Warwick. But then it got to where, if you look for the best songs, are the biggest songs of the 60s from the female groups in that period of time in the 60s and 70s. Every other one, in fact, more than that, the top, it's the Supremes. They just dominated. They were actually Berry Gordy considered his premier group. Supremes were bigger. I listened to it first, saying that they were probably the third behind Temptations, Four Tops, those Supremes. And I got changed my mind, because I think they blew everybody out of the water. They had 12 number one singles, 12, in a short period of time. And we'll get into dates and time awards later. But it's funny how I changed this actually three times in 24 hours. So I think you won't be disappointed. Another fact, there was, we discussed this before the show, Deborah, but I asked her how many Supremes were there. How many people came in and out of the Supremes under that name? And the answer is 11. 11 of them.
And the answer blew me away.
It, 11 members. It was Gene Terrell, Florence Ballard, Betty McGlown, Susan Green, Barbara Martin, Linda Lawrence, Sherry Payne, and the three that I would say they were Supremes were Mary Wilson, Cindy Birdsong, and of course Diana Ross. But Diana wasn't one of the originals either. The Supremes, 12 number one hits, incredible. Well, they had 9 nomination music awards with 8 wins, Golden Globe, 3 nominations, 1 win. Grammys. They had 12 nominations with only one win, and that's as the group in the early years when Diana Ross went on a solo career. There's a whole bunch of other awards. So they had she was nominated for one Academy Award, but she didn't win. But not just being nominated. People's Choice Award, one nomination, lost to Barbara Mandel in 1980. And then she had 11 nominations for TV and film with 5 wins. Also an Academy Award. Incredible. That was this is free. I mean, Diana Ross. Let's play. What was your favorite Supreme song? I mean, there were a couple of mine that Love Child is just always. Yeah.
I don't know. I have a hard time picking one when these things pop up, but I like Someday We'll Be Together.
Yeah. That's a duet too, isn't it?
I don't know. I thought it was just them.
When they got back.
Or they were about to break up or something. It was like one of their, I don't know. I don't remember.
Well, I happen to have some information. It's Diana Ross. She was born Diana Ernestine Earl Ross, March 26, 1944. She rose to fame as the lead singer of the vocal group The Supremes, who became Motown's most successful act during the 1960s, and one of the world's best-selling girl groups of all time. In fact, they're number 2 under the Spice Girls. And I would have to argue that Diana Ross didn't get a European exposure until she went solo. They remain the best charting female group in history, with a total of 12 number one hit singles on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100, including Where Did Our Love Go, Baby Love, Come See About Me, and Love Child. She started her career in 1956, and she's still with us, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I think she was, what year you say she was born in 1944? She was
1944.
She was 2 years younger than my dad. And my mom and my aunts used to spin 45s, and they had all the ones that you just mentioned and then some.
Yeah. She has.
They had the Platters. They had Smokey and the Miracles.
Yeah. You name all the. I remember they had it. The Motown's 50th anniversary. They had the Platters, the Cadillacs, the Temptations, Four Tops, and they're all on stage doing this little battle thing. You were either a Beatle or a Rolling Stones guy, or you were a Temptation Four Tops. That's how decisive that number one song at Motown is. But you say what's the best girl band? Of course, Diana and Ross's Supremes. A lot of hits. There was another Berry Gordy invention. What a genius. Following the departure from the Supremes in 1970, Ross embarked on a successful solo career in music, film, television, and on stage. Her eponymous debut solo album featured the U.S. number one hit, Ain't No Mountain High Enough, and a music anthem, Reach Out and Touch Somebody's Hand. It was followed with her second solo album, Everything is Everything, 1970, which spawned her first U.K. number one hit, I'm Still Waiting. She continued her successful solo career by mounting elaborate record-setting worldwide concert tours. I would have liked to have seen her. I was able to see Petunia Clark in Lake Tahoe as a kid, and I was just sort of drug along. Okay, I get to see Petunia Clark. But I'll tell you what, it was great. I would see the Supremes of Heartbeat, any of the girl bands. She continued her successful solo career, mounting elaborate record-setting worldwide concert tours, starred in the number one highly praised primetime television specials and releasing hit albums like Touch Me in the Morning, 1973, Mahogany, 1975, and Diana Ross, 1976, as well as their number one hit singles, Touch Me in the Morning, the theme from Mahogany, Do You Know Where You're Going To, and Love Hangover, respectively. Ross further released numerous top 10 hits on various Billboard charts through the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. She achieved several more global number one hits, Upside Down, Endless Love, Why Do Fools Fall in Love, Chain Reaction, If We Hold On Together, 1988, sorry, getting the dates on the others, When You Tell Me That You Love Me, 1991. Man. Let's go ahead and play, why don't you pick a song there, Deb?
Okay.
Oh, child, different from the rest, and always for you. Diana Ross and the Supreme. Off guard. That was Love Child by the Supremes, one of their number one single hits. And try to pull up information on it. We're here. Oh, I forgot to do that, Deb. We are here to educate everybody on the history and the life and times and career of Diana Ross and those called the Supremes. And my Love Child didn't come up. Oh, geez. Well, I remember wonder, I didn't see these information on how many times they were on the Ed Sullivan Show. I think they were one of the most. So there we go. Fancy Sloan. Did you feel you? 13 times on the Ed Sullivan Show. That's got to be maybe probably the most. Love Child, Never Meant to Be, Love Child. Okay.
And Ed Sullivan called them the girls 14 times.
Wow.
And with her, she was there a couple times on her own, so Diana Ross was actually in 18 appearances. 14 is part of the Supremes.
Let's see. Love Child, 1968. It was a year of change on many fronts in the United States with the escalation of the war in Vietnam and the civil rights movement, riots in major cities, assassinations, and a widening generation gap. Social messages found an outlet through songs by artists from all ranges of their musical spectrum, and audiences were expecting their music heroes to sing about things that matter. Even in that climate, no one expected a message song from the Supremes. Up until 1968, they were America's sweethearts, dressed up for TV in these matching beautiful gowns, singing their top charting hits, all but none about teenage girls' blissful or painful love tangles. Their hits such as Baby Love, I Hear a Symphony, Baby Love, Baby Love, Stop It, The Name of Love, and You Keep Me Hanging On were some of the best songs recorded at the Motown label, Snake Pit Recording Studio. But when they showed up on the Ed Sullivan Show to sing their latest hit, Love Child, on Sunday, September 29, 1968, the day before the single released, Gone Were the Shiny Dresses, all their previous performances. Instead, it was a shabby, oversized yellow sweatshirt wrapped around Diana Ross with an Afro wig to match, with her two bandmates wore pantsuits and jackets. All three were barefoot. The Supreme at Ed Sullivan Love Child. That doesn't make sense. This complete change of direction came from a new songwriting team that replaced the hugely successful team of Holland, Dozier Holland, who, after writing some of Motown's biggest hits between 1963 and 67, left the label after a dispute about royalties. Holland, Dozier, and Holland knew how to craft great pop songs with irresistible melodies and hooks, but a message song was not part of their menu. Enter new songwriting team, The Clan, who consisted of R. Dean Taylor, Frank Wilson, Pam Sawyer, and Deke Richards. The group was assembled by Berry Gordy. He knew his name was going to pop up. They placed in the historical Camp Francis Hotel to produce Motown's next hit. Pam Sawyer, the only woman in the group, suggested a song about teenage pregnancy. As expected, Berry Gordy was not enthralled. Controversy over the social issues was not his aim. The original lyrics were in the blues tradition of the singer telling the world of her troubles caused by pregnancy. Gordy always with an eye on the bank account, wanted a more positive narrative. As Gordy wrote, we arrived at a really touching story about a girl who herself was born out of wedlock and is telling her boyfriend she doesn't want to go the wrong way with him and bring another love child into the world. We all managed to take a negative image and turn it around into a positive way. But Gordy did not stop there. He helped with the song's arrangement and chord structure. Gordy's manager style and stories about how he run the label are often discussed, but his music contributions have been no less significant. Gordy wrote many songs. That's it, Dance Around. Okay. Gordy wrote many songs for Motown artists, among them Money, That's What I Want, Shop Around. You've Made Me So Very Happy. That was a Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And ABC. That was the Jackson 5. And I'll Be There, Jackson 5. The joint writing effort for Love Child resulted in a song that is one of the Motown's best. You know, that's a good indication of how these songs were eventually going to be written without guys like Sadaka and Manilow and a lot of Glenn Campbell, a lot of the ones that wrote these songs. No longer were they singled. They were, like I was told, what they call committee, written by committee, with great songs. They know how to plug them in, what chord progressions. They know the chemistry of how to create a hit. That's what the Wrecking Crew was all about also. But I think You Lack the Soul, something's lacking. It's the reason why they can't. They can't get that Motown sound again. I've asked many, many people, musicians, DJs, why can't they get that Motown sound that you cannot sit still to? The only answer I got, the best answer, was it lacks the soul. They're great songs, everything's there, but the soul. I don't know if that's true or not, but got to be a reason. Barry Gordy was a genius to start this, and the crew, and the when he started assembling people to write songs for these groups. Another genius move. I don't know. What do you think, Deborah? You think music, what they call R&B today, lacks any soul compared to the 60s R&B and Motown? Why, yes, Hatter. I think it might.
I couldn't find my mute button. I actually think that no other music compares to Motown. I mean, even though it's a genre I got to listen to because my parents did, I'm glad they did, and it's one of my favorite. I mean, it's one of those genres where you know almost every song, you know word for word every song, and my kids know all the words to every song because my mom did housework to Motown. And when the oldies came on and Motown was rocking, we knew it was time to help with the housework. And my sisters and I, when we clean, we blast Motown, or, you know, it's just the way it is. So people are amazed with my kids because they know songs from the 50s and 60s all the way up until now. My parents' friends used to be blown away by my sisters and I because we knew songs from the 50s and 60s because of them. I don't, in my heart of hearts, believe that there's anything. I'm a rock and roll girl. You know I love rock and roll, but nothing compares to Motown, period.
Yeah, well, I did an experiment one time with a bartender. And when he got off duty, it was 6 o'clock, and the tavern was quite full. He would stack country music songs. Because he went online and got the list of the most played songs in bars in the United States. And this is what it was, country. And I said, but I told him, you're not in a country bar. So he played 5 country songs. And I stacked up 5 Motown songs. And I'll tell you, people got up and danced. You can't sit still to it. And it just proved Motown, whether you... I think you subconsciously hear it. Another thing with Berry Gordy did, which was a genius act, he looked at what equipment was being listened to. Most of it was transistor radios at the time. So he produced these songs to mesh more with the, with a simple transistor radio to the top end. I don't know how he did it, the mix of mixing, but he did. I guess that tickles that feather in everybody's ear that you just got to move. Barry Gordy was, I think that was a genius move. I think that's something that made the Motown sound better. That's what I was listening to, like a damn transistor radio. The song's written by different people. What albums did she play most of? Was it the Temptations or was it early, like Martha Vandellas and Miracles? Not Miracles, but the Miracles. Smokey. Didn't know it was a question.
No, I didn't know it was a question.
I just say, what did she play the most of? What was played most?
That's a tough one, Hatter, because they had boxes of the 45s, and while they sat around the dining room table and drank, I got to play DJ, and I just kept putting one after another. There was Smokey and the Miracles, a lot of the Platters, the Four Tops, I forgot
you could stack a whole stack of 45s. I forgot about that.
Yeah, and it would just drop one at a time. So I would just grab the next stack and alternate them. But like, I mean, we're talking, I don't think he's considered Motown, but everything from Sammy Davis Jr. to the Jackson 5, Marvin Gaye, Al Green, Tammy Terrell.
Yep.
I mean, there's
my aunt
grew up when the chicks stood in line at the record stores to get the next top 10 records, and they got them all. So.
Yeah, stacking those 45s. I remember that. We had my dad was a special agent for the state of California, and he had a lot of FBI and Secret Service friends. But we were in the Bay Area. One of the special agents had a daughter. They went out to dinner, and we sat. I was very young. She was in high school, I guess, a teenager. And she stacked these Beatle records and all these hits from the early 60s. I remember that quite well. She was absolutely beautiful, too. The babysitter. Who'd have thought? I wanted to look up something. My scroller's working. I like my new phone. I'm hoping the mic's better.
What did you say?
I tried to use my search for the our vault, and it didn't work. So I'm scrolling, because I wanted to play something.
Well, all the songs that you had me load are loaded at the top for tonight. So if you look at the first one is Can't Hurry Love.
But I wanted to play one Motown song for that one.
Hey there, lonely girl.
That's Hey There, Lonely Girl, by written by Eddie Hallman, and it's slipping my mind who sang that cover right there. Some of the lyrics just are heart-wrenching. Let me make your broken heart like new. Hey there, lonely girl, don't you know this lonely boy loves you? Ever since we broke your heart, you seemed so lost each time you passed my way. Oh, how I long to take your hand and say, don't cry. I'll kiss your tears away. Pretty romantic. Wouldn't you say?
Amazing song.
It is. Let's we've got a stack of songs. Let's play Climb the Ladder to the Rooftop. I jumped out of the studio.
That's okay. I am looking for it.
This is a song that was made. It was bigger when Smokey Robinson did it, but it's a good version. You'll recognize it.
Here we go.
All right.
Come with me.
To the Roof. That was a 1970 hit single recorded by The Supremes, but there was a different sound, wasn't there? That was the first Supremes single hit with the new lead singer of Gene Terrell that replaced Diana Ross, who officially left the group 2 weeks before the recording of this song in January 1970. The song also marks a number one, a number of other hit firsts, I'm sorry, it is the first Supremes single since The Happening in 1967 to be released under the name The Supremes instead of Diana Ross and The Supremes. The first Supremes single solely produced by Norman Whitfield, Associated Frank Wilson, and the first Supremes single to make the United Kingdom's top 10 since Reflections in 1967. It has a different sound, doesn't it, Deb? Diana Ross.
Yeah, and after it started playing, I one of those songs that I didn't realize what it was by the title until they started singing it, and then I recognized it.
Yeah, yeah, I think the Smokey Robinson version was actually bigger. Like I heard it through the grapevine, Berry Gordy wrote for Gladys Knight and the Pips, and they recorded it, and later Marvin Gaye made a great cover, bigger, made it much bigger. And then Creedence Clearwater Revival also did it, made it even bigger, transitioned between the two R&B and rock and roll. That's what Motown basically did, was had a huge white audience and fan base. I remember Berry Gordy saying that he went to see some of his groups when they were not megastars, but small venues, and he said half the people were white. It blew him away. He didn't expect to see that, but like I said, Motown did the transition between the R&B, the black and white audiences. That's what Alan Freed was all about. He was the disc jockey that ended up locking himself into a booth. He was against the payola. Disc jockeys were being paid to play certain music, and they were trying to squash or not let the rock and roll and Motown, any of them, have any exposure. They wanted wholesome, clean, Engelbert Humperdinck type stuff. Nothing against the Engelbert Humperdinck, but... Yeah, Alan Freed was huge into the R&B and Motown exposure. Cost him everything. He died penniless on the streets in New York. We'll have to do a show on Alan Freed. He needs to be remembered. Can we play, just to be a little different than Diana Ross, play the version of I Heard It Through the Grapevine. This is the original that Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Here we go.
Thank you.
Don't you know that I-
Right. I heard it through the grapevine. And I, and you know what? Looking up the information, it's a little more complicated. Who wrote the song? A classic about a man who finds a woman is cheating on him. It was written by Norman Whitfield and Barrett Strong. Strong came up with the idea and asked Motown's writers, Holland Dozer and Holland, that's Barry Gordy, to work on it with him. They refused to credit the other writers, so Strong took it to Whitfield, who helped put it together. The song eventually became Motown classic, but it had a rough start. As executives at the company thought it was too bluesy and lacked hit potential. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles were the first to record this song. I was wrong. I thought it was Gladys Knight. But their version wasn't released until years later on an album called Special Occasion. The Isley Brothers then took it and crack at it, but their version wasn't released. Whitfield and Strong then had Marvin Gaye. See, they don't even list, Motown head Barry Gordy chose Holland Dozer, Your Unchained Love over Grapevine as the next single. Finally, a new Motown act, Gladys Knight and the Pips, recorded the song as a gospel rocker. Their version was a hit, entered the top 40. So I guess the first hit group that made it a hit would have been Gladys Knight and the Pips. 1967, it went up to number 2 in America. Marvin Gaye's version was included on his 1968 album, The Groove, later retitled I Heard It Through the Grapevine. After E. Rodney Jones, the Chicago disc jockey at WVON, started playing it on the air, Barry Gordy reconsidered and released Gaye's version as a single, which became even more popular and known as the definitive version of the song. Gaye's Grapevine pounded the charts about a year after Gladys Knight's going to number 1 in America on December 14th, 1968. I've got to get to where, see if it go down and see where Creedence Clearwater, if they mention it. Probably not, because this is all about Motown. Yeah. Oh, okay. No, so, Creedence Clearwater Revival released an 11-minute version in 1970 for their Cosmos Factory album. It was one of the few songs Creedence Clearwater recorded that they didn't write. Quite a contrast to many of the band's compact hits, it allowed them to spread out and jam. According to the drummer Doug Clifford, he was given free rein to create his drum part off of John Fogerty's guitar. At times in the song, Fogerty would set up the rhythmic lead that Clifford would follow, and other points of the song, Fogerty follows the rhythm Clifford set up. It's that, I think they did that in Born on the Bayou, another great CCR song. Great. I didn't know so many of these guys covered this.
I didn't either. Yeah. Sometimes there's so many people that do it that you don't always know who was the original.
Yeah, I had it wrong. I thought it was written for Gladys Knight, and they were the first. Apparently, they were the first one to make it any kind of a hit, which made them the first on the charts, I guess. Check this out. 1987, this got new life when it was used in the commercials for the California Raisins. If you remember, I don't know if you guys had those commercials. Yeah, okay. With the Claymation Raisins performing the song, in addition to boosting raisin sales, the California Raisins became an 80s fad and were the most popular Halloween costume that year. Buddy Miles, known as the founding member of the Electric Flag and as a member of Jimi Hendrix's Band of Gypsies, was the group's lead singer. That's great. Okay, I've got the little figurines, saxophone player, the lead singer, California Raisins.
I think I have them somewhere too.
Okay. The song was prominently featured in the opening of the 1983 film The Big Chill. As a group of friends learned the news about another friend's suicide, the soundtrack also boasts other Motown hits such as Gaye's What's Going On, which was a song about Vietnam, The Temptations' My Girl, and Ain't Proud to Beg, The Miracles, Second Thought Emotion, and Tracks of My Tears. The Four Tops. It's the same old love song, or the same old song, The Marvelettes, Too Many Fish in the Sea, and Mark the Vandellas, Dancing in the Street. California Raisins.
And every single one you just mentioned, my aunt had the 45s of.
I had a partner, big David Green. He looked like Magic Johnson. He was absolutely huge, nicest guy in the world. He bought me. He'd come over and I had my bass guitar out and jam it a little bit. And he bought me the Motown Gold 4 CD set, all Motown. Pretty cool. So, Motown. Really, I grew up in the Bay Area, San Francisco. We had the Big 610 Golden was the AM radio station. It was absolutely huge. The market there was bigger than LA at the time. Most of the music was coming out of like Berkeley, Oakland, San Francisco. Huge sound, and they had a lot of the best venues. They had Winterland, Fillmore West, or some of the Haight-Ashbury area where the music scene was. I remember some of the stories of areas where they didn't want black performers. The Beatles were to play in, I believe it was Atlanta. It could have been Birmingham, down south. And they had Billy Preston with them because he played the keyboards on the Get Back, if you know the song, the Beatles song. He were told, you can't go, you're not going on stage with him, putting that. Lennon turned and told him that he was a Beatle, and if he didn't play, the Beatles would not play. It became a big deal. They thought about it for a while, and Billy Preston ended up playing in Birmingham, Alabama. I believe it was Birmingham. But it shows how still racist some of the places were. What a shame that was. Trying to squash or put down any kind of R&B. And back to Alan Freed. Alan Freed was the man. He's the one that exposed everybody from Little Richard to the Miracles, Four Tops Temptations. Yeah, he's a hero in my eyes. Well, let's play another song. Did we do Baby Love?
We can.
This is one of their first big hits.
Well, sorry. While I'm scrolling down to it, I noticed when you had played Love Child, they mentioned Baby Love as well, and they were saying that they were calling attention to teen pregnancy after the war at the time, and it was like a not
underhanded. Yeah, it was obvious. Yeah, it was obvious.
Go ahead.
No, it was obvious what the song was about. There was no hiding it. Very controversial what your song subject matter could be. You had these guys that control what was on the air and what wasn't. And again, that's what Alan Freed was all about, break the censors.
And it mentioned it, Love Child, and it mentioned Baby Love as far as them being, they were indirectly trying to help push birth control by putting these songs in the minds of the teen girls, which I thought was pretty cool because it's like, I guess maybe what I'm trying to say was sort of subliminal. You're busy singing, and then you realize that, you know, they're trying to control teen pregnancy. And I thought that was pretty awesome and pretty innovative himself. And here comes Baby Love.
Baby Love, that was right. Motown songwriting team of Holland Dozer and Holland, that was Gordy, wrote the innocent song about teenage love, which was one of 14 U.S. top hits by the Supremes, so they added two more. Explaining how the trio wrote to NME in 1984, Lamont Dozer said, "I would elaborate with Eddie on lyrics," that's how Holland, and Brian Holland, "on melodies. Then Brian and I would go to the studio and produce the actual record, although Eddie should have been put down as one of the producers because he helped teach the artist a tune when the lyrics were finished." According to Lamont Dozer, this song is about my first love, who I never really got over. Dozer says many of the songs she wrote with Motown were inspired by her. This was the follow-up to Where Did Our Love Go?, the Supremes' breakout hit and first number one in America. Song mentions the word baby 68 times. So it's fitting that the next single would have that word in the title, 68. Baby, 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 baby. Baby Love was released September 17, 1964. Where Did Our Love Go was still on the charts. The next three singles, Come See About Me, I forgot about that one, Stop in the Name of Love, and Back in My Arms Again, all reached the top spot. All five songs were written by Holland Dozer and Holland team. You know, these are people in the background you never hear of. Berry Gordy required the songwriters to punch a clock when they came in and left for work for Motown, which he learned from Ford. The HDH, the Holland Dozer Holland team, was especially proficient after completing two or three songs a day. This is why the Wrecking Crew was the... did 85% of the music that came out of L.A. during the late 60s. They had these teams. Says Diana Ross didn't have a huge voice, but she could ooh like no other, which she did on Where Did Our Love Go? First version of the song didn't have her oohing, so label had Berry Gordy sent the team back to the studio where Ross did an extended ooh, 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 ooh that kicked off her vocals. Interesting. My Baby Love. You know, there's a certain, I don't know what it is, but a certain sound, I guess because it's the three Holland, Dozer and Holland with Gordy producing, all got a certain sound to it. I can't put my finger on it. I don't know. I know at the AM Records, he recorded, Berry Gordy recorded for the top end, the vocals in the top end to be heard clearly. So until they remastered some of the Motown, which the set I got, the Big D bought me, Motown Gold, those are all remastered songs. And man, and to hear the bottom, the bass, drums more, it was huge. Did it better. It makes it all better.
Right. So pick one more song and then we'll go out with some We'll Be Together.
Okay. What was my list?
Well, tell me what we got.
We haven't listened to Can't Hurry Love, and there was also Stop in the Name of Love, and then I was hoping to leave with Someday We'll Be Together.
Okay, let's do Can't Hurry Love. This is a song that Phil, Genesis, Phil, what's his name?
Collins.
Phil Collins, thank you very much. Phil Collins did a cover of this song. It's very, very good. But,
I agree.
Diana Ross.
Here we go.
No!
Can't Hurry Your Love. It was written by the prolific songwriting team of Holland, Dozier, and Holland. It was based on a gospel song entitled You Can't Hurry God, which was sung by Dorothy Love Coates and the Gospel Harmonettes, the gospel group based in Birmingham, Alabama. Check this out. Eddie Holland came up with the Holland came up with the title to Brian Holland's melody for this song. Lamont Dozier recalled in 1,000 UK number one hits. I thought it was Eddie Holland, sorry. This was the first of the second string of consecutive number one American hits for the Supremes at the end of 1964 and into 65. They charted five consecutive number ones in 66, started out with You Can't Hurry Love. And then they charted four more. A cover by Phil Collins reached U.S. number 10 and U.K. number 1 in late 1982. His version was used as the main theme for the 1988 film of the same name and inspired Andy Roach's bass to the Smiths, This Charming Man. I think I remember right, the video of Phil Collins, what he does, it replicates himself on the screen. There's like, he ends up with five guys doing it, singing. Sleeves pulled up, the arms the way, you know, the 80s look. Oh. Interesting.
Well,
and again, we're going to end it and just hit a tip of the iceberg on Motown. We'll have to do another one.
Absolutely. I like the fact that you picked one artist. It's so hard with so many. When you do Motown, you just try to fit in so many songs, where this time you can just, we just concentrated mostly on the Supremes. So I like that idea, plucking one of the groups from the amazing list of Motown artists, concentrating on them.
Yeah, it's just so much. If you did just all girl bands, for example, you would play two songs of each one, and you wouldn't give justice to the band and or the group. Called the bands, they were
absolutely
just a vocal band.
I totally agree. So why don't you do your wrap up, and then play out.
I would like to take this time to thank everybody that's listening, that's going to listen in our on demand. We love these, take a break from poetry nights and play some music. And we're supposed to go over more lyrics. The lyrics are all hallmark. girl loves boy, boy doesn't know she's alive, you know, that kind of thing. Or when they break up with a lonely girl. But Motown goes on and on. I think it ended with the Jackson 5. I think Jackson 5 pretty much, that was the end of the Motown sound. They still list some even up to Mariah Carey and they're considered Motown. I disagree. I think there's a certain time where the sound ended. They just did. 11 Supremes. Didn't know that. Like I said, Mary Wilson, Birdsong, Cindy Birdsong, and Diana Ross are the ones that I'm familiar with. I think Mary Wilson was the one that thought she could do better than being a backup singer. And then Terrell, Matthew Terrell, came in to take the place of Diana Ross. I think that's when Mary Wilson was a little mad too. She felt she could see the lead singer, I remember right, but deservingly so. For example, Neil Sean, who's the lead singer, a lead guitarist for Journey, he was second fiddle to Santana for years, and the guy was just brilliant. But to play behind Santana, that would be a little hard. Marilyn McCoo in the Fifth Dimension, another one that wanted felt she should break out, and they tried. But all the Motown sound, God love it. I think it's great. If I had, if God told me you could pick one genre to listen to for eternity, I think I would pick the Motown. And I'm a rock and roll guy too. Some of that.
Yeah, well, me too. And I can't say I disagree with that statement.
Yeah,
I need to take
it
with me too. Yeah.
Yeah,
great show, Pattern. I didn't know about 11 either.
Yeah.
So like,
well, like,
and then
like there was
the Wrecking.
It was like there was 19 Temptations. Believe it or not, but there
wow.
were only four tops. So you know, it's I'm a four top guy. Levi Stubbs. Take his voice out of it.
Yeah.
So let's yeah, let's play. Oh, I can't wait till we do the four tops.
Well,
just music, dancing
get
music.
Get working on some information, and we'll do that one next time. But okay,
maybe
so
need,
I did.
I think we
ahead.
Need a suggestion. We need a suggestion box. We were going to dissect American Pie too again.
We still
line
have it.
Line.
Yeah. Well, just depends
but,
on your
we'll
mood when.
Nothing but time. Yeah, nothing but time.
My pleasure. I like listening to you share the information, Heather. It's always a good show.
But
and the people seem to enjoy listening to the recordings, too.
Yeah, I saw that. We're more of a demand, on demand. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many countries now? How many countries are we in?
60, I don't want to say the wrong number, so I am pulling it up right now as we speak. Countries listening, the total is right
64.
Here.
67.
67 countries. And yeah, that's amazing. I'm so proud of us. But anyway, Someday We'll Be Together is a song written by Johnny Bristol, Jackie Beavers, and Harvey Boga. It was the last of 12 American number one pop singles for Diana Ross and the Supremes on the Motown label. And then it was released as a final Supreme song featuring Diana Ross, who left the group for a solo career in 1970. It was recorded at Ross's first, as her first solo single as well. So I thought that was pretty cool. And it was sort of like, you know, someday we'll be together, but I'm out of here. But I like the song. And
what amazes me is the short period of time, all this happens. Within 10 years, just Diana Ross just did every year, she just these awards and the Supremes.
And now it's immortality. Motown is immortal.
Yes.
And it
and
it crosses every genre, and it crosses every age, and it's amazing. And so is this show, and so are you. And here comes the song.
Thank you, Deb.
I'm sorry, I had to pause it for a moment. Hatter, monarch butterflies just got added to the endangered species list. I want to cry. Sorry, I had to say that. Here comes the song. Damn.
Okay.
From me, my love. just as your mama, baby. And there are stars above. Wanna say, wanna say, wanna say it.
Joe Hatter, thank you.
Someday we'll be together. Yeah, great song. That was recorded in Hitsville, USA. Thanks, Deb.
Love and respect.
Yeah, see you guys. Be excellent to each other.